work. If you are a victim of crime, if you are trying to graduate to becoming a survivor of crime, with an emphasis on the aftermath of crime and how it impacts your life, if you appreciate diversity of topic and want to come along for the ride, if you are looking for cutting-edge programs, information, resources, inspiring people that assist you in finding your voice, then you have come to the right place. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, with my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of ImaginePublicity.com. Thank you for listening and for sharing this podcast. So good morning, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Shattered Life Radio. I'm glad to report that a long time ago, I was fortunate enough to meet a community services officer in the city of New Britain, and we're going to talk about a very unique partnership in working with seniors. But before I introduce him live, just want to say good morning to Delilah in Myrtle Beach. And hey, Delilah, good morning. Can you reassure people that you are safe there and we're in the process of recovery?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I don't want to date the show, but this is, you know, one of the first weekends after Hurricane Florence ripped through the Carolinas and has devastated our coastline with flooding and wind and everything. So keep us all in your thoughts and prayers. Make donations to reputable charities who are sending people, sending supplies to help us here. Personally, I'm in a very safe location, and I'm not worried about flooding or anything like that, but I would totally appreciate anything anyone out there can do for victims of this, because it's an ongoing thing. This is not just going to be over in a couple of weeks. This is devastation that's long-lasting and will take years, maybe even decades, to recover fully from it. So we appreciate everything that everyone has done and is continuing to do to keep us safe, keep us fed, and keep us dry.
Right. Well, and, you know, ditto on everything that you said. You know, I have a personal investment there and know a lot of people, and people are just doing such great things. So keep them all in your thoughts, prayers, and pull out your wallet and your resources. So with that, you know, part and parcel of emergency management or serving the community is law enforcement. And Delilah, we are, in fact, with our guests, are all of a certain age where we're either into seniorhood or approaching that. And this is a community that sometimes is often underserved, underappreciated, lacking in resources. And because of medicine and technology, people are living longer, and maybe they just don't have the tools, they don't have the people support. I see that every day at work in my state government job, working with the elderly. And so I think it's so important that we're talking today about a partnership with law enforcement and other community resources. And we've done other shows with AARP and all of that to try to address this. So I think it's a wonderful thing, and I'm anxious to delve into it. And I know you feel the same, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We definitely need to get information out to all citizens, and especially elderly citizens, who oftentimes are confused as to what is available for them and how to access the resources that are available. Many, many elderly people just obviously don't know. So it's a very good thing that we're doing today to bring this information to those who truly need it.
Yes, that's true. And every state, every county, no matter what your government makeup, operates a little differently and has more or less resources. So with that said, Art Powers is a sergeant. I'm sergeant with the New Britain Police Department, which is part of the greater Hartford community. So Art, welcome to Shattered Lives Radio, and we so appreciate you being with us today. And before we start into what you actually do in terms of your role and modeling off of a triad concept, can you give us a little bit of a background sketch in terms of what you've done in policing and what brings you today to your current role?
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Actually, I started off in 1982 as an EMT with New Britain Emergency Medical Services, and from there continued up to become a paramedic. And I, that was like in 1982. In 99, I switched over and became a police officer and continued to try to do my public service. I always felt like you should be giving back to the community. You know, there's been times when we've all need to be helped and people have helped us. And I thought it was kind of my turn to give back. So I enjoy this. As a police officer, I've done all sorts of different things. I've done field training. I got on the SWAT team as a medic operator. I've been on the crisis negotiation team. And one of the things I did was become the police liaison with Triad. And Triad it comes as capital letters, but it's not. It stands for three, group of three. So it's not, there's no, the letters don't mean anything except the group of three. And basically what that is the law enforcement, which would be me as the liaison, the senior citizens, and the protective or support services in the area to work out. So we do our best to help the seniors feel safer and try to educate them as to what's out there. We give them places to go and events to go and lectures and all sorts of things like that. And we have a good time. We're doing it. And I have a good group of volunteers. They work very hard. They donate their time, raffle gifts, all sorts of things. So we've got, I think, somewhere around 12,000 senior citizens in New Britain. So it's a big group, and we do our best to get out there and reach them all as much as we can.
Well, that's great. I was just going to ask you a little bit. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the demographic makeup of New Britain, how large a city? And like you said, there are about 12,000 seniors there.
Yeah, we have like 70,000 people in the city, and a lot of multi-apartments. So we have a lot of people kind of on top of people sometimes, probably not like some of the real big cities, but I say we're like a medium-sized city. So we do our best to, like I say, get the people to come out of their apartments and get together and do fun things. There used to be a lot of factories here at one time, so we have a lot of different ethnic groups, it's kind of like a little melding pot of its own here. As things, you know, change and evolve, we try to keep up with that.
Mm-hmm. What have you, I mean, when you initially started, how many years have you been the liaison in charge of this? Several?
Yeah, I'm probably around 6 years. I took it over and when I was upstairs in training, and then I went back to patrol as a police sergeant, and I was doing well with it. So it was decided that I should stay with it, and I wanted to, because you know, like I say, it was fun, and I felt like you're giving back to the community, kind of a thing, and that's important to me. So probably 5 or 6 years at least.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered, have you noticed, in terms of working with seniors, or when you initially started and now 6 years down the line, have you noticed maybe there are like two camps in terms of dealing with seniors, those that are pretty healthy and vibrant and active, and maybe then those that are kind of, embrace being a senior and do activities, and then there are those that kind of stay behind closed doors and are fearful of the city? Because let's face it, New Britain has its, you know, its share of crime, as all cities do. Can you give us some kind of a feeling in terms of how people have integrated into those programs? I know that you have to probably spend time building trust and all of that. How do you introduce yourself to the seniors as well?
Well, like I say, we do a senior lecture series from May to October. Matter of fact, October we're having our last one of the season. And we feed them breakfasts, and some of the organizations with us sponsor those breakfasts. And then we give the lectures, do all sorts of things, talk about Medicare, strokes. I'm just going to look at the list from this year alone, being a loneliness. Big one is the AARP fraud watch that we do that like every year. The last one we did to help with technical things. So they taught people how to use their cell phones, and which was the bulk of it. But people also when they learn how to use your tablets or your iPads or even your TV remotes, they had people there to teach them. Next month is the Tai Chi for your health. So we've had some fun. And the other thing I do is go to the different senior housing apartments, and I give safety lectures there. So the people that might not be able to come out or don't want to come out to the lectures we give at the senior center, I'll go right to them, and we do the safety lectures there. And if they have any questions, they can ask. If they've got problems, you know, that they might not want to call the police about, I'm there, so they can tell me there, and we, you know, get advice or offer suggestions or see what we can do to help out from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, are some of these programs are they funded by the city of New Britain, or are they some of it comes from a particular fund that the police has? I mean, are you sponsoring these activities directly, or you go on donations?
Well, when we first started, Officer Carol Zezet really started this with Chief Sencio, and also Mike Carwin, who was head of the senior center, and Arnie Schwartz, who did some of the original work with Senator Blumenthal for the Connecticut triad when they started pulling into Connecticut, and Officer Zezet was out there basically looking for donations from like anybody who could help out. I know American Savings Foundation has helped us for several years with donations. That we use mostly that one towards our senior prom, which is the senior citizen prom. But just to be confusing, we hold it at the high school. So,
okay, listen, Delilah, I heard about this. I think this is so cool. So tell us about a senior citizen prom.
Okay. Well, we have the prom in April, and we always have a theme, and most of the people will dress to the theme. We've had, I have a list of the themes we've had in the past, but we've had casinos and like carnivals and things like that. Let me see, I have the list right here.
Mm-hmm.
Luau's, peace and love, red, white, and blue, rock and roll, cowboys and cowgirls. Spring into spring, things like that. So every year we have a different theme, and so they dress up to that. And we'll like for the casino, say we had some gambling games, obviously without money, but but they do have prizes. We have raffle gifts are donated by all the organizations that are involved with us, so they have a free raffle. We have a picture booth, kind of like one of the carnival picture booths.
Mm-hmm.
They have other entertainment. We've had magicians. For the luau, we actually had dancers, Hawaiian dancers.
Is this something where they you send them invitations and they there's transportation provided? You bring them to the high school for an evening, and they dress to the nines, and then they have these activities, and it's the purpose is for them to be able to meet all of their community in a non-threatening environment and have fun? Or what is actually the purpose of this? Is it to foster relationships between the community groups and the police and these seniors, and to have them have fun and, you know, maybe capture the memories of when they did senior prom years ago when they were really in high school?
Yes. it's all that. We first of all, we put out through the newspapers and posters, and the Senior Center puts out a newsletter every month, so we get the word out to them that way. And some of our people are involved with the some of the housing, so they put up we put up posters in some of the senior housing buildings. It's for this one we actually charge $5. And they get with that, they get not only everything I already talked about, but they get a live band, and they get a full meal, you know, with you know, all the courses and stuff. And at the end, what we've been doing the last couple of years is we have this place called Avery Soda, and they do all the old fashioned flavors, you know, birch beer, So and they put a special label on for our, the year and the try it, and they usually match our theme. So I'll have a picture, say, of like Hawaiian dancers from like our luau and a palm tree or something. So they know when they're coming, they're getting well fed and they're getting prizes and they get to dance. And we have a king and queen of the prom, and they crown them, and we have the best dressed. And so they have a lot of things going on. And yet it is a way to get them out where they feel safe. They get to socialize, and yet they're safe. You know, we've got a, you know, besides myself, several of the volunteers and people around to help them if they need any help. They have a good time. They have a really good time, and we have a good time as the volunteers with them. And I'll tell you, some of these seniors, I couldn't keep up with them when they're dancing and stuff like that. They're amazing.
Well, yeah, that's not our actual high schoolers involved with this.
Yeah, we try to keep it intergenerational. We have people from the boys and girls school come. We'll have some of the high school kids will help us with waiting on them. You know, we bring the food to the tables and stuff because it's kind of we bring the plates out to them so they don't have to be all hanging in lines forever.
Right.
We've got some other kids from the high schools, from some of the service groups they have there. So we try to mix them in, and that way they realize that young people are still, you know, decent. Just because you may hear something on the news that you know some young person with this or that, it's not like that. They're really decent, and they want to help, and I think the young people also find out that the senior citizens aren't so scary and you know, that you get rid of the stereotypical ideas that both sides have. So that
yeah,
works out very well also.
That concept of intergenerational is really great. I've got a couple other shows in the planning and in different aspects, and I just think it's a wonderful thing to bring people together. But let's get that a little bit in terms of the crime prevention aspect and whatnot. How would you characterize the concerns in New Britain now, and how maybe this program has changed in terms of the seniors' ability, or you know, to maybe approach you? And can you share some stories where this may have really changed people's mind and made a difference in their lives, so that they're not as fearful, or maybe you've prevented a crime because you've built this relationship with seniors?
Well, one of the things we do, like in the safety lectures especially, I think one of the most important things that are out there is be aware of your environment. You know, don't, and not that seniors are looking at their phones. That seems to be more of a, younger age. And then when I say younger, I'm talking like, you know, anywhere from like probably 12 to like, you know, 50, really, because everyone's looking at their phones now. So they're not usually the ones doing that, but you got to pay attention to everything around you. If you're shopping, don't something as easy as don't leave your pocketbook sitting in your shopping cart and then turn to get something, because it takes a split second and they turn around and they don't notice right your pocketbook's gone. And even if they have it on video, you know, good luck trying to find the person that looks like that. Who is that person? So things like that. Walking out to your car, be aware. Have your key out. Don't have it in, say, the bottom of your pocketbook, or, you know, buried somewhere in one of your pockets. Have it out. Be ready to go. If you see strangers kind of hanging around your car, you know, don't just walk out to your car and assume they're okay. If someone all of a sudden tries to say, hey, you know, you got a flat tire, I'll help you change it or something like that. And you know, you be aware, be a little suspicious. I think the senior citizens back in the day did things on a handshake, and I think more trusting, whereas it's harder to do things like that nowadays. They're very different. I think sometimes that's harder to get used to. You know, someone calls you on the phone and you pick up and say, you know, how you doing, and go on from there. And the people now are trying to scam them. You know, we have all sorts of scams going on, which we try to educate them about. You know, someone will say, hey, Grandma, I'm stuck in jail. I need to get bailed out. And she goes, is that you, Joey? And he goes, yeah, Grandma, that's me. It's Joey. Yeah, that's who it is. And the more they talk, the more information they get out of them. And pretty soon they're sending, you know, money electronically. They go like down to CVS or something like that, and they'll send these checks out. And then once they're gone, there's almost no way to trace them. So they do that a lot. This kidnapping scam is big, where they'll say that, you know, we've got your son, or you know, your dad had an accident. He's hurt, but we don't want him to let him go. We need the money in advance, because say they'll make up some sort of like we're on probation, we're not supposed to be in the state, and we got to get back. So I need the money right now. We're not going to let him go. Or, you know, you've got your son, and we're not going to let him go until you give us money. And they go into a panic, and they start sending money. They don't check. One person, I said, well, did you call your son that supposedly be kidnapped? She said, yes. He said he's fine. But she was still in panic. I said, well, why would you want to send the money if you just talked to your son? But they just couldn't, you know, they get scared. And they, you know, they want to help out. One lady actually walked past the police department, and someone said, I think she's being scammed on the phone. And I talked to her. I said, you know, is everything okay? Yes. Can I help you with anything? Yeah. And she's like, no, I'm fine. And 45 minutes later, she's coming to report she'd gotten scammed. And I said, well, why didn't you talk to me? She said, well, they told me not to talk to you when I was on the phone. And she lost a couple $1,000s. Go ahead.
I'm just thinking, you know, I talk to seniors for my job a lot, and they're so vulnerable, and a lot of them are not even for legitimate reasons working with a state agency. They will not answer the phone. I mean, that's one way of protection. Or, you know, we deal with people into their 90s and above, actually, who are legally blind and low vision, and they – because they're so elderly, they a lot of times their family is out of state. They don't have a local support system or someone to turn to. So in that case, are you finding, Art, that I don't know if you, like you say, you go on patrol, but you're also doing this, I don't know if it's integrated or certain days you're doing the senior outreach and certain days you're doing the patrol traffic. Are majority of people very elderly, single, with no family support that you're interfacing with, and these are the people you're trying to funnel into these activities and groups? What's the situation there?
Well, we do have New Britain Housing, we have a woman there who will try to help the people out and, you know, get them to come, or, like, say, get me to come to them. In some instances we do. So you get whoever's in charge of the buildings, a lot of times that's who, like, reaches out to me, and that would bring me in. And because of the lectures I've done in a lot of these places, you know, that's when some of these problems will pop up. And, you know, like, someone's bothering me, someone's been knocking at my door and trying to come in, or, you know, stuff that they wouldn't call, they're afraid to call the police, or they don't think it's worthwhile calling the police for. That's when a lot of these problems will pop up, and then we can kind of deal with them one-on-one. We do security checks at a lot of these buildings. You know, we have them scheduled right in through our computers and dispatch. So we try to keep up with things that way. It was funny you talked about not answering the phone. That's one of the things we talk about. If you don't recognize the phone number, don't even pick the phone up, because these people are so smooth and so good. They get all sorts of information out of you before you even realize it. So that I'm glad you said that, because that's an important thing, especially everything's got caller ID now. So if you're not recognizing the number, don't pick it up. And if it's a real number or a real friend, they will leave a message on your voicemail, and then you can call them back. But all these people get, you know, probably half a dozen calls a day from all these scammers and stuff and trying to sell you stuff. So that's the best way to do it, is to not pick the phone up.
And they're phone people of, you know, of that era, you know, 70s, 80s and beyond. I mean, in the majority, and they may not be computer savvy. And I just have to say that with a lot of these large state agencies, Department of Social Services, Department of Labor, all of these, they've set it up so that they're robocalls, they're automatic systems. You can't get a real person. So that they downsize, and it's very, very hard, even for people that want to find resources on the internet. They set it up so that you can't really get a real person. So it is very difficult for seniors, and I get calls every day. They're so frustrated. Well, I never got a call back. I can't get through. What do I do, Donna? So, you know, is there, besides what you do on the ground, or is there a particular protocol that if you're seeing they have other issues that may be related to elder care or medical or whatever, what is your routine in terms of you see somebody that has a lot of needs that are unmet?
Well, like I say, we have in Britain Health, our members, some of the people from the Britain Health Department are members, and we can hook them up through them. It's funny because we just had the senior lecture on all the new technology out there, so it's showing them how to use their phones, for instance, so they'll know, you know, how to dial in, or you know, you've got to press another button to get the numbers to pop up so you can dial the extensions and things like that. And I know that's frustrating for them. We'll have, if they look like they're on problems, say in one of the senior housing units, we'll have hook them up with one of the people in charge here to help them out with that. Or when we're doing the group lectures, a lot of people say, well, you know, I've got a computer, I can help you with that. So you can just hook them up sometimes that way.
It's also a challenge within that certain age group, because they may have cognitive deficits, they may have hearing impairment, they may have visual impairments, and to be able to negotiate technology with those other impairments is very difficult. So it's always good, too, to be able to interface with other agencies that deal with those other types of challenges as well, right?
Yes. They have some interesting people with the Department of Aging and things like that. You can kind of hook them up with. Some of the problems we run into is the people kind of want the help, as long as they're able to answer questions logically and they're still with it mentally. If they don't want help, we can't give them help. But if they do, we can usually find some way to tie them in with an agency or have someone, you know, come in to, sometimes just to clean the help clean their apartments, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's very important. Do you know historically what your predecessors? I know when we chatted before, you said some of the people that initially ran these programs think like the needs, I know with technology, that's one of the changing needs, of course, because it's changed the way our society is run. But, you know, back in the day, what would a community police officer be doing with seniors versus today? Is there a whole different landscape in your opinion?
Yes and no. I think, you know, back in the day there was more, you know, we had like more beat cops and things like that. The smaller neighborhoods. So you could talk to the cop walking right down the street from you. And we're trying to get back to that. You know, we're trying to get our people out on bicycles and things like that, so they can do one-on-one. Carol, Officer Zezet, when she started this, saw the need. As 1996, I believe, and that's when she started this, because she saw it in the need and said, you know, let's reach out and try to help some of these seniors and get them out there and educate them and do the things that Triad's done. So I think that's how it started. Before that, sometimes you're just on a wing and a prayer. But realize back in the day, families kept their relatives when they got older. You know, they didn't get kind of pushed off into convalescent homes or kind of left in apartments and stuff like that. So I think in that way things have changed. If they're in a convalescent home, at least they have someone attending them. But, yeah, they get into some of these apartments, and they don't want to move. You know, some of them are living in these older houses and stuff, and they don't want to move. They've lived there all their life.
Right.
So, I mean, my dad's 90 years old. He still goes to work, but he's been living in that house for probably over 80 years of his life, in the same house that his parents had. So it's I understand that. You don't like to change. Nobody really likes to change, but when you get older, I think even more so, because it's more comfortable. You know, you don't have to learn something new, and you've been doing this for years, and it's like they like doing that. So it's hard sometimes to kind of draw them out and show them, you know, things are changing, or maybe you do need some help. Maybe you need someone coming to help you clean or do Meals on Wheels or something like that to help them out. And you get them to do it, then they go, wow, this isn't so bad.
And decreasing the social isolation. What's the situation there with access to transportation? Because I know that's a big thing are a lot of your activities focused in on holding activities within their apartment units or the senior center or, like you said, the high school? You're trying to get them out, but yet you bring activities more to them?
Like say with the senior lectures, we bring them right to them. And we do use the senior center. Rex Cohn's in charge of that now. He's been great letting us use them for the lectures and things like that. So we do try to keep it fairly central. But they have the senior center has a transportation service that you can call and make appointments, not only to go to our events, but also for doctors, you know, appointments and things like that. So there are transportation services out there that can help them and get them out. And obviously that's what we're trying to do with some of these, the things we have, the proms, the health fair. We got a health fair coming up in October. That's always a lot of fun. But they do get rides to that. And the convalescent homes usually get a bus and actually bring them in on buses.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. What type of issues do you see that may be pervasive to the population, like loneliness and isolation and fears for their safety? And when someone comes to you, or do you go to them, do you do an assessment on what this person's situation may be and how you can connect them with resources?
Normally, through Triad, we don't. I'm not sure who they would really hook up with that. We do talks.
Social worker, Art?
Possibly. That I'm not sure. I know we do a lot of talks on falls. If, for instance, EMS notices something, we can, you know, come in and I could check it out. I get some of that stuff forwarded to me. You know, someone seems like they're living alone, but maybe they shouldn't be. But yeah, again, you can't force them out of where they are. And
that's true. Well, we get that all the time. Wanting, you know, housing is an ever-present need with a lot of the calls that I get. And so I guess you have to try to figure out if they have a case manager of some way. For instance, is this a lot of these seniors may be hooked up with the VNA, Visiting Nurses Association, for if they have some type of injury, orthopedic, chronic illness, and they're being seen by a social worker for something, or a physical therapist or whatever, and you know, I just got a call yesterday about somebody wanting to know about an emergency button. Well, MedAlert versus a Lifeline system, because when the CNA wasn't there, they fell. And so that's what I try to do. And like you said, the Department of Aging, which is part of our umbrella agency, I'm giving a plug now for my agency, the Department of Rehabilitation Services, of which Services for the Blind is now a part, you know, has a plethora of services, including health benefits analysis. If you're not on the right kinds of programs for disability entitlements or for which you could glean services, I'm constantly referring to the what they call the Choices Area Agency on Aging counselors to have an analysis of, well, are they taking advantage of all of the resources they could, so we could hook them up. And so, Art, if you're not aware of that, I could give you a couple of people's names that you could, you know, have on hand. Just by doing this every day, you kind of get your own little network and say, oh, I'm going to funnel it to this person or that person, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, that would be great. Most times we do our best to kind of reach out to even if they're out of state family, other family members, and that's kind of where we start from there. And many times they don't know, you know, because they're far away, they may be in another state, or they weren't aware of what was going on because, you know, their relative didn't tell them, or they weren't, like, they hadn't seen them in a while, so.
Right. And I don't know if you've seen this, but we get a lot of clients that whose families are out of state if they have family and they're very elderly. And they're not really there to be on top of things, and they try to, you know, procure services like of a volunteer nature perhaps. And it's really more medical needs and more kind of intense heavy-duty needs. And they don't know how to procure services, or they think, you know, they think their relative is okay, but yet, and I think it's a very hard transition. And tell me this, if you deal with families, I don't know if you do, the families always have this perception that mom or dad is doing okay, but there's that crossroads. And when things start happening and there's all of these issues and problems, and maybe they're not sharing with their family, you know, all of the struggles they're going through, and the family at some point has to step up to the plate and say, hey, I'm in Florida, but this is Connecticut. I have to decide to become a legal conservator. I have to take charge of the reins. I have to look into the resources and do something. And people's lives are busy. They have other lives. But I get very frustrated and thinking, you know, it's time. It's hard, but they need to step up to the plate, and they need to help their parents. People, in my experience in working in elder care for all of these years, people, they put this off to the last minute, Art.
I don't think they always realize. I think with senior citizens, from what I have seen as a medic, one of the things that when they retire, if they don't have stuff to do, some hobby, something to keep them busy, they're usually dead within a year or two. Even if they hated their job, they just don't have a reason to get up in the morning anymore.
Right.
So they have to stay active. And the other thing is, when you're talking to your parent, that you know each other. You're like at a lot of common, you know, ground. So you may think they're okay, but then you throw that same parent in a odd situation, maybe someone they don't know, and it's a whole different thing. And a lot of times they seem okay, then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, they're not. But they've been kind of declining all along, and they may be kind of like, you're not picking up on it because you're so used to talking to each other about the same things, or, you know, just all, like say, just all of a sudden
the
it seems safe, to drop. A lot of times there's
topics,
a slow slide.
Right?
Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The safe topics, because I don't really want to tell my daughter that I fell in the bathroom the other day, so we'll talk about the weather.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of people, they're very clever because, you know, they don't want to – they want to stay independent and, you know, do their thing, so to speak, and you know, so yeah, a lot of times there is a slow slide and the family members don't always catch it. And the one that will catch it is someone's like, I hadn't seen, you know, so-and-so in 3 years, and oh man, are they bad. And the other family says, no, they seem okay. I talk to them every week. They don't notice it because it's a slow slide. Or someone on the outside may go, wow, what happened, you know?
Yeah, or somebody that comes in as a volunteer or intermittently,
yeah.
They're saying, gee, not only does the senior have to be observant, but all these other people that may be interfaced with them intermittently and say something. I get so many calls from people say, I'm a friend of so-and-so, you know, good for those people. I mean, we can't share a lot of information if they're a client officially because of confidentiality, but
yeah.
We try to provide general information. But, you know, that brings up another topic, something that I'm looking into as well, and you say that you do patrol and traffic. Let's talk a little bit, an issue that comes up a lot with people, or particularly maybe in their 80s or maybe 70s, with someone who perhaps is driving the car, and they're not as vigilant, their concentration skills, their reflexes are not good, and maybe the family is aware of it. They're not as sharp as what they do, or and maybe they're keeping their driving limited, and that is good. But what would you advise in terms, and I know you've encountered this, what do we do as family members? How do we approach that? And if you've seen seniors drive unsafely, what do you do as law enforcement and the liaison person, Art?
Well, there's a couple things, because it is tough when you've got family members doing that, and you see they're slipping, and making a danger to themselves and probably others on the road. The AAA AARP especially has classes to show to hopefully teach seniors some better habits of driving, kind of keep them up with stuff, and they may be able to pick some of the guys out there. Unfortunately, as a police officer, until they have an accident or something like that that kind of catches our attention, that's kind of usually when we get involved. Then you would send a license back to motor vehicles, and they could go back and retest. But, you know, when you're sending it back, and you do that, you know, we're going to jump right on that, because when you do that, it's really kind of, I feel, kind of stealing the last vestiges of freedom for the senior citizens. You know, now they're going to have to depend on buses or taxis or family members or, you know, the senior transportation services. So we're careful about doing that, but sometimes you just, like, you need to be retested. I just, you know, you're scaring me, or you know, they back into someone and give them a good hit, and then kind of, well, I didn't even know I did it, you know, something like that. And so,
don't become involved until they have an accident.
Normally, we wouldn't know, yeah.
Okay, and that's unfortunate. And then when we're talking about retesting, is that if they have an accident and there's a police report, is it then mandated?
The only time it would be, they don't have to be, if they want their license back, yes, they would have to. If we took their license and sent it back to motor vehicles, yes, if they wanted it back, they would have to retest it. Just because you're older and have an accident, that doesn't necessarily mean someone's going to grab your license and say, oh, you shouldn't have this. You kind of get the facts and circumstances of what happened and start putting in, you know, because everybody has accidents. You know, a lot of times people have accidents.
Right.
That's what they call them, accidents, but... So it would depend on the circumstances, on how, for instance, how you might answer the questions, you know. Do you know what happened? Why did it happen? You know, things like that would catch you. It's like, say, well, geez, they don't seem really kind of with it when I'm talking to them, you know. Kind of almost the same way you with the DUIs, you know, the driving while intoxicated or under the influence kind of things. As you're talking to them, you're going to be looking to see how they react physically and mentally, and that's, like, say, how we kind of catches our attention and gets us going in that direction.
Right. Well, you know, it. So for them also, would there be, in retesting, because I don't know this and it may vary in different states, is there a written test and a driving test for retesting?
Honestly, I really don't know. I'm going to guess, I'm sure there's definitely the driving section. the written stuff, I don't know. I don't know how important it is to know, like, how many feet, you know, it's going to take the skid.
Well, yeah, I've forgotten that stuff, too. Don't tell anybody. But.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, no, yeah, but you don't know the feet, but because you've been driving for many years, you do know. You could say it's this many feet, but when you're driving the car, I know when I step on the brake, I'm probably going to stop right about here. You know, not exactly,
right.
But so yeah, I don't know how important that is. I mean, is you're driving the physical part of it. I think that's the important thing. The interesting thought. I don't know if they give the written test. I would think I would guess probably not, but I don't know for sure.
Right, and I'm wondering, you know how we have the laws here where they've really fine-tuned it because of all of the deaths with teen drivers and their limited license. Is it for if seniors have to, become retested or are advised to? Is there such a thing that you know of a limited license? So, for example. Yes, she can drive, but she can only drive during the daytime. She can only drive within a certain number of mile radius or can't go on the highway. Is there such an animal as that, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. The only time when you get something like that, say you've got a driving under the influence and they've taken your license away, but you still need to get to work, many times they'll give you a license that says you can drive to work and back, but that's all. You know, if they catch you out going to the store or something like that, it's like, you can only go to work and back with this. So they do that there, but they don't, as far as I know, they do not do that. I've never seen anything like that with the senior licenses. The best you're going to get is they should be wearing glasses or, you know, something like that, something that we would all have on our licenses, you know.
Wow. Well, it's a very difficult issue, and I'm just thinking – so, hypothetically speaking, if you're in that situation and you're listening to this show with a parent, a grandparent that you're kind of concerned about, but they haven't had an accident that rises to the level where the police have been called with a report, what do you recommend? Would you actually come in as a liaison? And if the family said, "Mom's not going to listen to me," would you actually be kind of like an intermediary?
Could
you fulfill that role?
I could. My suggestion would be first is to get them to one of these, like an AARP driving class. And sometimes I don't want to do that either. If they think that their driving is fine, they shouldn't be, like, afraid to go retake a driving test. But a lot of times they know, and they're just trying to, again, put it off because, like I say, to me, that's you're like in your last vestiges of freedom as a senior citizen, still being able to drive and get out there and, you know, go visit someone, go to the grocery store, go to the doctor,
right.
The doctor's appointment, or having to, you know, look for a ride. So,
right. Well,
yeah, that interesting question because, yeah, that's a toughie, and we all struggle. Many people with family members are in that situation, and it's not fun, and they think kind of like they're getting punished, but they're not. You're trying to keep them safe, but, you know, here's an adult, and now they're getting older and slowing down, and it hurts, you know what I mean? They feel kind of like they're getting stuff taken away from them, and after all these years of being the one that was the adult you'd come to, your mentor, your parent, whatever, and all of a sudden now, you know, it's role reversal, and it's
you're switching roles.
It's hard.
Well, it is, and the other thing I might want to mention about that, and maybe I'll call on you for a particular situation that I know of later, but if you're in a urban area or city in our state, we have other things, unlike the Myrtle Beach area or some of the other places that I've seen. We have paratransit, we have dial-a-ride for certain kinds of appointments. I mean, there's always Uber and taxis and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
If you're in a little tiny town of our 169 towns in Connecticut, and we're not a county government, unfortunately, you know, if we can go into these meetings with our family and say, you know, you can't ride, but you can call Dial-A-Ride and you can get and you do have to deal with their logistics and all of that and signing up with help, there is a way still to get to where you want to go, they'll bring you shopping. If you're in these particular areas, but if you're way up in a rural community, it is a lot harder, but there are resources. So I'm just saying, you know, if we paint the picture that it's not necessarily an all or nothing situation, if you get creative, you could get help, right, Art?
Yep, that's one way to do it. Like I say, the problem is senior citizens don't like to change. And that's,
right.
That's not a bad thing. That's a human condition. But I think as you get older, like I talked about my dad living in the same house, he knows it's too big for him. It's very big. But he said, you know what, I'm used to it. I don't really want to change now. And I understand that. And it's the same thing with the licenses. I think a lot of times they'll even know, but they don't want to change. They're comfortable, you know, and they don't want to get out of their comfort zone. And when you're younger and more energetic and ready to take on new challenges, the seniors aren't always in that mindset. Very, you know, some of them are, but not all of them. And it's a tough situation.
Tough to
get them to admit, I might need some help, or maybe I shouldn't be driving, or like you say, I probably shouldn't be driving at night. I had my cataracts done, but now I get an aura around the headlights that makes it hard to see, things like that. And it's like I say, it's very tough for them to admit and change, and it takes extra energy that they may not have or may not want to use. That's a tough one. I have personal experience with that. So yeah, that's not fun. You're doing your best you can, but you feel bad at the same time, even though you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah. I think we have my computer went down. I'm just checking with the time. I think we have about 10 minutes or so, Delilah. Is that right?
Yeah, about 8 minutes.
About 8 minutes. Okay, Delilah. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering in your travels and in your area, is there any particular issues with seniors that you've noted that are maybe unique to that area? There are a lot of people that are, as you know, that are flooding to the Myrtle Beach area, to Florida, to Georgia, that are retirees. And what have you noticed, Delilah, in terms of seniors that are coming to, you know, tourist areas that want to retire there? What strikes you?
We've been inundated with retirees in the past. I've lived here 20 years, and it's just amazing to me the growth in our population, which is causes a problem because it's very difficult to keep up with that type of growth with your infrastructure, with your resources that are available. I can't say that I know firsthand anything specific to seniors. I know we do have a lot of senior care centers, and we have senior recreation centers, and there's always a lot of activities going on. Now, whether there's someone or an agency or something like Triad that is getting these people out of their homes and intermingling with others, I mean, I don't know. I don't think there is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something on the to-do list, right? for whoever wishes to take it on in the future. I mean, I think if we have this big influx of people coming in, that should be embraced, right? And developed, because it can only help. We don't want people to be moving to that area and be, you know, isolated in their little island and not having resources. I mean, if you're in, and is this a difference, Art or Delilah? If you're going into institutional care, and in quotations, assisted living is sort of independent living, so you know, with some supports, or skilled nursing facility, that you have some of the resources already built in. But if you're a fairly healthy person, or even someone with a disability like me, and we're moving into a place, and there's, you know, you can always look up your senior center and try to get involved. But Art, what would you say to people that maybe are coming to New Britain, or they've had to move there because, you know, their family's there or whatnot? What should they do if they're moving into your community and you're a senior? Do you have any particular advice?
Well, I think what you said about contacting the senior center is very good, because they are tied in with the health department and do all sorts of things there. They also have some neat trips and stuff to go on if you're healthy enough to go, bus trips. Rex Cohn has done a hell of a job bringing people to all sorts of entertainments and cruises and things like that. But that would be where I would start. I mean, we tried. We could kind of, if they could call, we could try to reach out and help them. A lot of times, it's good to have a family member, even if you're going to some kind of lesson homes and things like that. It's always good to have a family member to be kind of an advocate for you, because you know,
right,
people try to do the best they can to take care of you. But sometimes, you know, you know they get overwhelmed with their duties, and so it really does help to have family member intervene. And that's where it gets tough for some of these senior citizens. That some of them outlive their kids, or like say they're far away.
Yes, and I see that every day, and that is more and more common. And you know, and then there is no one legally responsible, and they're kind of out there on their own and it's kind of catch as catch can. And those are the ones that I feel the worst for, and I try to go the extra mile, even though, you know, it's beyond the scope of what I'm supposed to be doing in my duties, but I feel bad for them, Art. And I say, okay, I will try to help, and I'll try to find something for you. And I guess it's just my personality, but I think human nature, people are going to do that. But I just think, do you agree that it's becoming a crisis and people are living a lot longer, and there's more and more seniors, so there needs to be people like you in the police department. There needs to be people, you know, within city government, within social services agencies, within nonprofit. We all need to work as a team. Is that the answer?
Oh, I think so. I think with the baby boomers, the graying of America, which I am part of.
Me too.
That there's definitely you know, more and more and more seniors, and it is, I think, heading a crisis mode. A lot of them are still healthy, and I mean, I remember when I took one of my paramedic classes, one of the doctors, she used to have a practice out in the Midwest with all these farmers, and she said, no, they just keep going. She said, they come in, they're 93 years old, and the way they stayed healthy and young is they just kept working. They never stopped. So there's a lot, for the most part, a lot of senior citizens, probably more than you would believe, are healthy. It's a smaller percentage of the population that are ill and have problems. But I think for some of these younger kids that are going to college now and they're looking for job opportunities, that's the way to go. That, you know, if you're not doing something trying to clean up the environment, I would say, look towards ways to get involved with the senior citizens, because there's a ton of them out there. We're all getting gray and slowing down a little bit, and we do need help. And I say we, I'm just talking about more the age group than not me, but
you'll be there like me.
I'm working on it.
I know, me too.
Yeah, so it's. We do need help, and we do need to get together. And I believe going back and having family members help out is big. I think we've gotten away from that. I don't think people respect age. They don't the age and experience and wisdom. It seems like some of the younger kids, and I'm not trying to kick at any group, kind of like they, you know, they don't think they need that information and knowledge. And then later on, they probably figure out they do. But you really do the experience and the knowledge. If you tap into that, you know what an amazing asset that is, and you can do that while you're helping them. You're helping them out, and maybe, you know, say making a meal or giving a ride to the doctors. Talk to them. You may be a little bit surprised how much their senior citizens know. They've seen a lot of changes over the years. A lot of changes.
Yeah, and I think they each have so much to give to each other if you just have an opportunity. And just to mention quickly, we got a couple of minutes. I'm working on a show, and this is in Connecticut, with and it hit the New York Times, where Quinnipiac University has partnered with Ashler Village from Masonic here, whereby college students, and Art, you may have heard of this, are moving in next door to seniors, maybe because of the housing crisis or whatnot, and they're living next door side by side, seniors and college students, and I've been trying to connect with the powers that be so that we can do an intergenerational show about that. Have you heard of that?
I haven't. Sounds like a great idea though, because they can learn and help out at the same time, and maybe they could get some. The college students obviously don't have a lot of money. Maybe they can get some type of a cheaper price on apartments or whatever.
I believe that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
If I get this going, I'll mention to you when it becomes official. I'm still working
on
it.
And I've heard a lot of good things about Masonicare too. Just by the way. So,
I'm sorry, say that again.
You said that Masonicare is one of the people.
Masonicare, Ashler Village is partnering with Quinnipiac college students, and that's when I'm looking to see if we can do an intergenerational show about that. Kind of hard to get in touch with these people, but I'm working on it. So anyway, would you like to give some contact information for people if they would like to contact you, whether it be people in New Britain or beyond, and maybe you could direct them to resources, or if there's people that we know locally that really don't know about the good work you're doing?
Well, I can give you my email address.
Sure.
It's Arthur, Arthur, Powers, Powers,
mm-hmm.
at newbritainct.gov. I'll even give you my desk number here. It's 860-826-3167, and I certainly could reach out and see who you need to be hooked up with, or if I could help out. I do this as a police liaison, but I tell you, our officers are out there every day working with the senior citizens and bending over backwards to help out. We've got a good group, good force, and good people out there, and they're always willing to help.
Well, thank you for the really good work you do. Thank you for persevering and connecting and trying to make this show possible. And please keep in touch with me, Art, because I think we can share resources, and we'll keep you posted too on future shows. And so thank you so much, and feel free to share this podcast with whomever. Delilah, any parting words before we sign off?
I just appreciate Art taking his time on this busy Saturday, and I hope that we can have you come back again with some other updates.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And so with that, we will close out another edition of Shattered Live Radio. Till next time. So everyone have a good weekend and be safe. Thanks, Art. Thanks, Delilah.